Outdoors coming on the airwaves, coming your way.
Hey now, we're outside indoors, beat on a buck on a snowy day.
Hey now, we're inside outdoors, baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Inside Outdoors is brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills, forests, and lakes of southern Indiana. Produced in Bloomington and brought to you live every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. Inside Outdoors features hosts Don Jordan, Buddy Bill Moser, and Rich Reardon, and gives you everything you need to know about the outdoors surrounding our local community, our state, and around our nation. With fishing, hunting, local and national outdoor news, the environment, natural resources, safety, issues in our community, and just down-home family fun, our goal is to inspire how to be a good steward of our precious natural resources. You can call into our show at 812-323-1200 and ask a question or tell us what's on your mind. So sit right back, get a cup of coffee, journey with us into the lakes and woods, and find out what our natural resources have to offer. If you miss the show, you can listen online at WFHB.org. Just go to the public affairs listing, and you'll find a podcast of our show at Inside Outdoors. This is WFHB Bloomington, Indiana, volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana, also 98.1 in Bloomington, 100.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at wfhb.org.
Good afternoon or good morning, as it may be where you live. This is Inside Outdoors in Bloomington, Indiana, and I'm Don Jordan, and I'm here today with...
Hey, I'm Rich Reardon.
And...
This is Alan Brandenburg.
Well, Alan and Rich, my compatriots, our buddy Bill, is down today. I'm sure he'll be back in action again one of these days soon.
Yep.
We'll be glad to see him. But meanwhile, we have a lot of things happening this week on the outdoor front and news-wise.
And, so true.
I think the first one I heard about this morning when I got up was the... no permit to carry in public law. And I guess Rich has the lowdown on that. So why don't you just read it off, Rich?
Well, there's a lot of opposition from this, but of course that didn't really matter too much. state police didn't like this idea at all. But the Indiana House on Monday voted to eliminate a license to carry a handgun in Indiana. House Bill 1369 passed by the House by a 65-31 vote and now heads to the Senate, where it's already picked up key endorsements. Under this legislation, sometimes called constitutional carry, certain offenders still could be prohibited from carrying handguns, I guess basically if you're a felon or something like that. So there's a slight bit of paperwork you got to go through, but... one of the problems in it is the license raises $5.3 million per year to train law enforcement officers, and that tab will be passed on to you and I again.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
Well, maybe it'll be passed on, or maybe they'll just do away with the training. I mean, not that it did that much good anyway, but...
Well, the bill would make police officers and general public less safe, the people that are opposed to it will say, but advocates say that law-abiding citizens should not have to pay for the right guaranteed for them by the Constitution.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Well, so, I don't know. I don't recall seeing anything in the Constitution about carrying in public and walking up to the courthouse with an M16.
Yeah. It's absolutely unbelievable, in my opinion, that we would do this. I don't really have a problem with if I decide I want to carry a weapon, that I have to get a permit for. It just, you have to get a permit to drive a car, and other things that are dangerous. And this is, just going to allow more guns to be out there without anybody really noticing.
Yeah, well, I think the point is they want to be noticed. And with this law, you can pack your six gun out on your belt,
right.
And that's the whole point. That's, I believe, you could always carry it secreted with a permit, But this is a big change to be able to carry it openly. I mean, you're going to be walking into the candy store and there's a guy standing next to you with his pistol holster.
Right.
You know, isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, it's amazing.
You know, the good news is it'll be like a nutcake badge. I mean, you know, you'll be able to see those people coming from miles away.
Yes, I believe I would want to carry mine concealed. In any case, I wouldn't want to be advertising the fact that I was carrying a pistol.
That's no like doubt about it.
That's like asking for trouble.
Yep.
I think.
Well, I think that's what this is all about, isn't it? Really asking for trouble. I mean, I think that's what this actually boils down to. So.
Well, yeah, I suppose that's true. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Well. You know, I was kind of shocked. I had no idea this move was afoot up there. Of course, who knows? You know, the strange things coming out of Republican legislatures these days. And our place is just as strange as the rest of them.
So let me clarify this. So let me see if I understand this completely. You know, I was thinking about getting my, you know, applying online to get my lifetime carry permit. So that will mean I actually don't have to do that now.
As of March 2022, no.
March 2022, okay.
Of course, that can always be changed. I already have a permit, and it is a lifetime permit, so I'm not going to throw it away.
Right.
Because things can change, and very well might if people begin to see the light. I think it's going to have to take numerous killings of children in schools and some more assassinations to get the ball rolling on the turning this back.
Well, what's the law? I guess it changes state by state, but if you carry into another state, you have to go by their laws. But don't you have to have some sort of a permit or something that shows that you're licensed in your own state?
Well, if you don't have to be licensed in Indiana, I guess you know, that's how are we going to
right.
Produce proof.
Yep.
And the rule I always heard was, is if you're from another state and you just can't carry a weapon like if you wanted to go to Illinois,
mm-hmm.
Right.
If you got caught carrying, you were probably going to get sent to jail.
Yeah. There's numerous websites now explaining the crossover laws going into from one state to any other. So it's a problem. This is going to make it a lot more of a problem.
Yes, and it's I don't know what to say about it other than that. It's just seems.
Well, it's an interesting philosophy. So think about this for a minute. So, you know, the burden of proof now is on the least reliable person to prove that they're not eligible to carry a permit, and that's a convicted felon. So, you know, I'm a little, I'm not sure who thought that was a good idea. You know, but now there is no way to separate those people. I mean, if everybody has a permit, it's only probably dumb luck that would find a felon carrying a weapon illegally, whereas mm-hmm. before you at least had the barrier of you at least had to apply for it. Now that that's gone, I'm not sure what there is to stop that or how you would even enforce that. How would you enforce that?
I'm guessing there's something you have to go through in order to get. I don't know. Opponents say that police would not have an easy way to check whether someone's allowed to carry a firearm. So one of those, forgetting whether, you know, what it takes to not have one or to be screened, I don't know whether they're just going to say, he's a felon. Are you a felon? You know?
Right.
I don't understand. It seems like they should have some kind of a database, but it's definitely... If the police don't have an easy way to check whether you're allowed to carry it or not, I just don't see any benefit to to that at all. I mean, I just, it seems like it just, it'd make it a much more difficult situation no matter what.
And well, I think it's made it an impossible situation. I mean, I just think they've thrown away the mechanism to catch people who are not allowed to carry guns. You could think what you want about those laws, but they are the laws. Convicted felons cannot. Now that means zero. I mean, literally zero. There's no, you know, preventative force in trying to enforce that. You know, it's all on the backside now. I mean, the only way you're going to find out is if you happen to, you know, arrest some convicted felon who has a gun on their person, and oh, I see you have a gun and you're a convicted felon. Well, that's illegal. You know, I don't know. I mean, well, that's the horse has already left the building there, left the barn. I'm not sure. You know what value, you know, that law has anymore.
Well, you know, the other thing about it is the it seems like a good way for police to all of a sudden be able to just say, to stop anybody and say, well, now we're going to have to check in to see. In other words, it's just a convenient way of holding you, you know, to check you out, you know, well, if they have a way to do that, but to find out if you're a felon.
They could not do that without probable cause. And you can't say that somebody carrying a pistol in public view or an M16 is probable cause when that's legal.
Yeah, so, it most certainly is not.
So unless they've done some other malfeasance, just walking down the street with your loaded M16 isn't cause for probable cause, as they say.
My guess is the local constabulary is going to be so busy writing additional tickets to make up for that $5 million, they're not going to have time to stop anybody that they're not going to write a ticket for.
Right.
Well, it's possible. Anyway, that's how it is. That's how things are today. And I suppose that if they had this same law in Washington, D.C., everybody who toted M16 or 50 caliber machine gun up the steps of the Congress of the Capitol building and into it would have been doing so legally.
Yeah.
And if it's a legal weapon, and you know, just about everything's legal nowadays, you can actually, used to be to get an automatic weapon, you had to get this special federal permit. Well, you still do have to have a special federal permit, but it was only someone who was classified as a firearms dealer who could get that permit. Well, now I see that these permits are being transferred to guys they sell these automatic weapons to.
Right.
So I guess you really don't have to be a firearms dealer to own and carry a automatic weapon now, which is very alarming in my view.
Well, it also says in this article that the bill would require state police and the Bureau of Motor Vehicles to develop a process to enable law enforcement to quickly check whether someone is prohibited from carrying a handgun. So there may be something that you have to go through when you get your license renewed, or maybe they'll make everybody renew their license more often. I don't know.
I don't either.
In order to say, hey, this guy was a felon, maybe you'll have a little F on your license. I don't know.
Well, I don't either. It's kind of mystifying. Well, in any case,
Don, I've always wanted an RPG. I mean, can you buy one of those today? I assume there's a lot of those laying around over in Vietnam that,
well, I think there's a lot of those back home. There's a lot of those laying around in every country except the United States.
Yeah, exactly.
Although there may be more of them around than we know of. And
that's frightening.
It's a pretty simple piece, and there's almost as many RPG units around as there are Kalashnikov rifles, which is something in around 30 million now or something like that have been made.
Yeah.
The most popular gun of all, rifle of all times.
Yep.
Well, and the other thing I don't understand is what about bars and nightclubs? So I guess you can just carry your gun straight into the nightclub and have a bunch of beers and have some peppermint schnapps. And
it's woo-hoo! Like the Old West. Destry.
It is like the Old West.
Right. You have to go in there without your gun and don't drink anything but milk.
Right.
And, you know, there's that old, the old Carson City Saloon there. I remember this was like one of the first articles in the Rolling Stone magazine from 67, 68. And, you know, back then, of course, that city still had like a high affinity for the Old West. And somebody had walked into this bar that was owned by a bunch of hippies. And he had a sidearm on and was dressed cowboy-like. And when he got to the bar, the bartender said, "I need to check your weapon." And he handed his weapon to him across the counter. And the guy fired it into the ceiling twice and said, "Yep, works fine. Here you go." I think we're getting back to that.
Yeah. Well, in 2020, almost 4% of there was 120,000 handgun license applicants, and there were 4% of them denied. So that's a fairly hefty amount of people that got turned down that won't be turned down in the future.
Exactly.
And I guess it's just sort of if they get in trouble, hey, you shouldn't have been carrying that.
Hey, do you think this will help out Indianapolis's drive to reduce the number of murders?
I tell you.
I mean, they have four or five every weekend, and sometimes weeknights also. Very active shooting up in Indianapolis.
They do. It's like the South Side of Chicago in the 80s. You know, there's like almost one a day here in Indianapolis now.
Yeah.
Of course, if you were a black person, African-American man, you might be justified in carrying openly carrying because the police are your primary danger.
Exactly.
I'm glad I'm not, but I feel sorry for those who must endure that. It's just ridiculous. It's time to get a handle on the guns. Of course, there's always a chance that Biden will do something this time around to. But, you know, we got old Joe Manchin over there in West Virginia who's going to vote against a lot of Democrat stuff, and that might be one of them.
Well, I was asking about out-of-state, and I just found some info on that. It says Hoosiers will still be able to get a reciprocity license to carry for other states. 5-year licenses would be free, while lifetime permits would cost $75. That money would help make up for the loss of in-state permits.
Free?
Is that license for each other state, or is this one license you buy from Indiana that for states that are in reciprocity with us? And what is that? Is it?
You know, I
think that's just to prove that you're eligible to carry a gun in Indiana.
And do other states have to be in on that kind of agreement too?
I'm guessing
that's usually the way it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there are some states that are and some states that are not, Don.
Well,
I'm
kind of like
looking into this. Yeah, I think there are some states that don't accept our reciprocity, yeah.
I'm sure that's true. That's the way it is on hunting violators. You know, if you get a guy who's what's our buddy's name who used to do our radio show, the rock and roll singer?
Ted Nugent.
Ted Nugent. Ted got nailed on that when he killed the puma on public lands out in California.
Right.
And he was banned from hunting in the 38 states, states that were in on this agreement. But not everybody is in on that agreement. So I wonder if this firearms thing is the same. I know there's been a lot of people arguing for a long time for a national firearms permit. And I can see the good in that, and I can see the bad in that. So I have a feeling that there's not going to be a national firearms permit anytime soon.
No, and you know, I think anything that is ran by the states, you absolutely are going to have states that just don't want to play ball with you. I know that if I were to take my pharmacy license, I could go to, you know, almost any other state in the union, except any state that I actually wanted to go to. So California, New York, Florida, any of the states where I might, Massachusetts, any place where I might want to live, they do not take my pharmacy license. But if I wanted to go to Iowa or Oklahoma or Arkansas or Mississippi, they'll take my license right now.
Well, yeah, I have some of those. My states would be Montana, New Mexico, places like that. I don't think they care whether I carry a pistol or not.
No.
No, they don't. I remember in the 70s, I worked for a gas station for a little bit of time when I was in college, and I remember seeing a guy get out of the car with a cowboy hat on and a big gun strapped to him, and I was like, oh, wow. I guess I am in the Wild West, you know?
Well, you know, well, the interesting thing about the monetary side of this is when you start giving people free certificates for reciprocity use for 5 years, I mean, you've went from collecting money from people to going in the hole to get them, you know, receipts for things that they normally paid for. I mean, not only is this going to cut the state police out of $5 million, it's going to put the state of Indiana in that much more of a hole because now we're giving these things out for free to people who ask. So this is a double financial whammy for the state of Indiana.
Well, there's some things that the state of Indiana is willing to pay money for, and one of them is to arm their citizenry.
So evidently, there you go.
We're not willing to pay our teachers more, but we can sure let you carry that 45, buddy.
Yep.
And there you go.
That brings up another question. How old? Can you be 12 years old and carry one around,
usually 18 and you have to take some kind of a firearms course, don't you?
I don't know whether that affects that at all.
Yeah.
It probably does.
I mean, for all we know, that could have been page 855.
Yeah.
In small print on this legislation that went through. I mean, you know, we won't know for a while.
Well, the place to find out would probably be the state police. They probably know everything there is to know about this new bill already. So
I think so.
That'd be the one to take a look at.
Well, anyway, that's something new in the world of the outdoors. If you just happen to go down to the 7-Eleven, you might run into somebody with a gun.
Okay, hey, there's actually three more stories going on. We've got the Wisconsin wolf hunting and trapping.
Right, I saw that.
And we have that starts on Monday, and we have the big fire down at Patoka Lake.
Yeah,
that was a big
one. And geez, what was the other one? There was another one. We had that story about the bass research, about the biters and non-biters.
I saw that.
I know.
Yeah,
I know you. One of you at least saw that. And so, where should we start? Well, Wisconsin wolf hunting.
Yeah, let's start with the wolves.
Yeah.
Okay. Well. The best, I looked everywhere for the best story on this, and I ended up at the Milwaukee Journal and Journal Sentinel now. Why don't I just...
Sure.
...what they had to say about it. This article was written on February the 19th, which was last Friday. So I suppose the wolf hunt started Monday, 2 days ago, or, you know, the Monday of this past week. So anyway, here it goes. The State Court of Appeals. Now, this is the State Court of Appeals. On Friday.
Uh-oh. I think we lost Don. There he is. Don, we lost you there for a minute.
We froze up for about 20 seconds, Don.
Oh, I did?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
You have to start over.
I have to start over? Okay.
Please.
So here it is from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The state court of appeals, not the federal court of appeals, up in Wisconsin, that had been in Milwaukee, on Friday denied an appeal by the Department of Natural Resources, Wisconsin department, that sought to stop a Wisconsin wolf hunting and trapping season this month, which would have been this past Monday when it actually started. The appellate court decision paves the way for the season to begin Monday, and it will last until kill quotas are reached or February 28th, whichever comes first. The kill quota is 200 wolves, by the way.
Right.
And they have 4,000 guys who got drawn to get permits to kill these 200 wolves.
4,000?
4,000, right.
Wow.
Friday's legal proceeding was the latest in a whirlwind of activity since the wolf was removed from the protections of the Federal Endangered Species Act January 4th by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service at the instructions of the former president. The delisting allowed state officials to once again manage wolves, including by lethal means such as depredation control and hunting and trapping. Depredation control means shooting from a helicopter or poisoning them.
Right.
Or any other method you can think of.
I thought it was just hunting. I didn't know it was trapping as well.
Yes.
I haven't heard that settled.
It's everything. They had planned to begin the next wolf season in November. The Natural Resources Board, which sets policy for the agency, agreed in a 4-3 vote at its January 22 meeting. Now, the problem with beginning, this was the DNR's main objection to this, was that starting the hunting, trapping, depredation season this week puts us for the next 28 days or so in the breeding season. So it's likely that not only will these 200 wolves be killed, but several of them will be females carrying a litter of pups.
Right.
So they're going to do more damage. They're going to do all the possible damage that they can do. In any case, that's the rules of the thing. Let's see. What else they got to say here about this? Okay. The plan to have the hunting season in November, like the DNR wanted, which is, you know, when the breeding is done, that decision triggered a lawsuit from the Wisconsin Institute of Law and Liberty. Now, how's that for one for you?
Hmm.
On behalf of Hunter Nation, a Kansas-based hunting advocacy group. The action was filed in Jefferson County in Wisconsin, where on February the 11th, Judge Bennett Brantmeyer ruled the agency had, quote, overlooked its plain duty, unquote, to hold a wolf season this winter and ordered it to implement a season as specified in state statute. Under Wisconsin law, the DNR, quote, shall establish a single annual open season for both hunting and trapping wolves that begins on the first Saturday in November of each year and ends on the last day of February the following year, when the species is not listed on the federal or state list of endangered or threatened species. Now, I'm sure that Biden is going to restore the endangered species status to the wolves, but it's going to be too late for these 200 wolves in Wisconsin.
Yeah,
it would appear.
But Don, the way I understand it is, when they did this, they didn't present any evidence that these wolves were any danger to any livestock or human beings. This was simply that the hunters were being cheated out of their right to hunt wolves, and this had nothing to do with depredation because of damage. This was just hunters just wanting to hunt.
Right. And actually, I think that's what we said here, is that this lawsuit was not based on anything like that. It was based on the fact that state law had been passed by the Wisconsin legislature requiring the Wisconsin DNR to have a winter wolf hunting, trapping, depredation season.
Oh, wow.
So that's what the lawsuit rested on. It wasn't on anything factual. It's just that the DNR didn't fulfill their legally required duties by opening the season.
Wow.
And that could only happen, of course, after the U.S. Fish and Wildlife season or service removed the Endangered Species Act, their species coverage for the wolves, which really did not happen until recently. So they could not have had a wolf hunting season as required by Wisconsin law because of the federal law. So what they sued under, though, was the state law requiring them to have the season, not without the consideration of the Endangered Species Act being in place. So there you go. That's pretty much the way it is.
Got it.
And the places where these wolves are where I used to live, up in northwest Wisconsin. Actually, northwest and actually all of northern Wisconsin, mainly the parts that border Lake Superior and go down into the Indian reservations in those areas.
Yeah.
And well, each county has its own quota. Zone one, which would be the Superior Hayward region where I used to live, they get to kill 62 up there. And the next one would be zone three, which is just south of the Superior Hayward region. And butts up against Minnesota, which is very wild over in there. So I can see why there are wolves there. And the other high permit area is that area, which includes Ashland and Red Cliff Indian Reservation, and going over to following Lake Superior over to the Michigan border. That's pretty much all woods up there. And yeah. I know there are wolves there. I used to see wolves when I lived up there, and it may be disconcerting the first time you see them, because when you do see them in the woods, that you'll see one standing on the edge of a tree line just watching you. And that scares the hell out of some people, but you know, they don't do any, they don't attack people. We haven't heard of them attacking anybody or carrying away any babies or anything like that. So, but it is, they are there and you can see them. And in the past, they weren't that afraid of exposing themselves to you. Well, that's going to change. It's probably changed already. They're smart, and they know what you want if you're out in the woods with the rifle. So
you're far more in danger locally up there of running into a feral dog than you are being attacked by a wolf.
Oh, that's for sure. That's for sure. Here's a couple more things about this. As of last Friday, the 19th, the DNR had received more than 20,000 applications for wolf hunting and trapping tags. $10 for an application. 20,000. 4,000 winners will be allowed to purchase the $49 license, and winners will be able to obtain licenses and carcass tags and begin hunting and trapping last Monday. Initial quota to kill 200 animals. The quota is spread across 6 management areas, which we just talked about. The number may be reduced pending claims to a portion of the quota by American Indian tribes. Ojibwe tribes holding hunting, fishing, and gathering rights in the ceded territory, which is that area up in northern Wisconsin, about one-third of the state, are entitled to claim 50% of the harvest. So the Ojibwe's could take 100 of those, or they could say they took 100.
Right.
Leaving only 100 for the poor trophy hunters to get their wolf to stuff and set in their living room.
Okay, well, that's good news.
I have to add here, you know, I'm not against hunting. I believe it is humans' right to hunt, but it's not our human right to trophy hunt. At least in my opinion, if you're just going out there to get an animal to shoot, stuff it, set it in your living room or put its head on the wall, that's not legitimate reason to kill an animal. And if you want to eat it sure. If it's killing your cows, okay. But short of that, just wanting to have one to say, I killed a wolf and I'm a big hairy chested guy, is not going to do it for me. Sorry. Those of you guys out there that don't agree with me have a right to do that.
I completely agree with that.
The DNR has estimated in Wisconsin that it has 1,195 wolves in 256 packs as of late winter 2020.
Whoa. Wow.
Both modern era highs.
Wait a minute. So wolf hunting and they're wolf only hunting. Admitting that they've got a little over 1,000 and they're going to take 200 of them?
Right. That's right. Of course, as little as 20 years ago, they had probably had 30 or 40 wolves.
Right.
So they've increased. Wisconsin held wolf hunting and trapping season in the last period of state control over the species, killing 117 wolves in 2012, 257 in 2013, and 154 in 2014 before a federal judge ruling returned the wolves to Federal Endangered Species Act protection. Okay, so that's about all there is to say about this, as far as I can tell. That's the way it goes, boys. I'm sorry.
Very sad.
Yeah, it is too sad. Too sad. Okay, so wolves, let's hope they get their endangered species protections back. Of course, they've been doing this for a while out west, and judges out there the federal judges keep smacking them back down, but they keep pounding away.
Yeah.
And when Trump removed the endangered species protection, or told the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to do that, that opened the door everywhere. And wolves have been mistreated in this country ever since they became a nuisance to ranchers, actually. And people are afraid of them for no apparent reason. And although they are big and scary, if you came face to face to one, but they're not going to attack you like a grizzly bear.
No.
Well,
out west, Don, my understanding of what they do out there is they have a mechanism for farmers who have legitimate, and this is what I thought the word predation always meant, was that there was a, errant, animal on the loose that was a danger to livestock or human beings, and they would hunt it down individually. That's what I thought predation was. The word predation has gotten to mean, open hunting for seemingly no reason. I could be wrong about that, but out in Montana and the Dakotas out there, Colorado, where they have a wolf problem occasionally because of their free-ranging cattle on, acreage of a 50,000-acre farm, that they get permits to do that. And that was what I thought predation was.
Well, the thing is that wolves naturally are pack animals, and they hunt in packs. It's not
right.
It's not one animal.
No.
So when you're going after wolves, you got to go after the whole pack. And I'm sure that's what some farmers who claim that their animals have been attacked. I don't know that many of, there aren't that many cattle farmers up in northern Wisconsin or
sheep. No, there are not.
It's too damn cold.
Yeah.
And so they can't really use that for an excuse up there.
It is not an excuse up there. No.
But what it is, it's the deer hunters and the moose hunters that want to kill these wolves, primarily.
Oh.
Because of, they're just convinced that it's not chronic wasting disease or hemorrhagic disease that's making the deer population going down. It's these darn wolves,
Oh, wow. I never even thought of that.
That's what's going on up there.
Wow.
It's always been that way.
Well, and, that doesn't really wash too well, because most of the time they're taking the weakest bit of the herd out. They're not going after the big bull elk, or or moose, you know, they're looking for the easiest prey they can get, which is usually helping the herd.
Yeah, right.
And not, you know, so that's really not an argument in my opinion.
Well, I'm sure that's true. That's not an argument in that respect, but that's the one they're using. But you know, more so it's the threat to the domestic animals, which is what they claim, but
right.
I don't believe that they have much data on wolves killing a lot of domestic animals up there in northern Wisconsin.
Right.
Yeah.
They probably do kill some deer.
Wisconsin is not much less popular or more populated than the Dakotas.
No, it's very unpopulated actually.
Yeah.
Mostly because of the Indian reservations and the federal national forests up there. So no, there aren't many people up there.
No.
And I've never heard of a single person being attacked by a wolf up there.
No.
Ever. It's something you might hear of happening in Alaska. I think I've heard of one in the last 25 years or so, but it doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
No.
Okay, poor wolfies. How about the fire at the Hoosier Hills Marina at Patoka Lake?
Yeah, the 11 houseboats destroyed. Boy, that was quite a picture they had there.
Yeah, the one in the Dubois Herald, is it?
Yeah.
I believe, the Dubois Herald. That's a Wednesday, February 24th edition. They had a, you know, they say the guy that owns the place said the fire started up near the store, you know, the main operating place there, close to it, which is close to the shore, and went up that dock.
Right.
And you can see in the picture that they have, their lead picture on their newspaper, it's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 boats are in flames.
Yeah.
So, I mean, big flames. And they talk a lot about when the fire department finally got there, they had to reel their hoses out from their pumper trucks, and they didn't have a capability, I guess, of dropping a pump into the lake and using that to spray water on the fire. They had to pump it from their pumper trucks, which were several hundred yards up the dock.
Yeah.
Well,
if they tried to do the same thing here at the Four Winds, they'd have the same problem. JDOC is a long way from the parking lot.
Right. That's right. Hey, boys, my chimney sweep is here. I'm going to have to cut out.
All right.
Okay.
There's a lot of facts in that fire story on that Dubois Herald place, if you can find it.
Yeah, I've got it here, so we'll keep talking about it. But we'll see you next week. Thanks a bunch, Don.
Okay, thanks a lot. See you, boys.
Good luck with your chimney.
Don.
Bye-bye.
You're clean.
Thanks.
So,
you know, Rich, anytime I see, you know, boat fires, I think somebody's probably had a very successful fire, you know, historically. You know, there's been several instances where people who were upside down on their boat payments, you know, had a very successful fire to end that problem.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that's what that was down here. Sounds like it came from the store, which has got, you know, multiple electric things going on there that may have caught fire and spread down the dock.
Right. And they are, if you can tell by the picture that's there, that they're really right next to each other, each one of these boats.
They are.
So
yeah.
I'm sure that was part of the problem too. But, and I don't know, you can't really tell whether the actual dock itself was on fire, but boy, it was big. I didn't realize that a lot of these houseboats had enough stuff on them that burn. I guess if you get the gas goes up, then that's the main problem. But boy, it was a huge fire.
It was a huge fire. I was really surprised when I saw that. I was like, wow, that literally could happen to any marina.
Yeah, they still haven't figured out what started it. So I'm sure maybe down the road here we'll find out some more about it. But
yeah, we will find out more. Yeah, when I saw that picture, I thought it was Monroe. I mean, because they look so similar.
Yeah,
all the docks look that way. But yeah, that was pretty startling fire down there.
Yep, and I got another little bit of tidbit, which is actually good news for a change. President Biden has ordered a review of Trump's assaults on America's natural treasures, which means, if you remember, Trump took away a lot of the status and the land in the BLM, especially in some protected monuments in southern Utah. There was one on the
Monument Valley, all that down there,
Right. So Biden's administration says it's begun reaching out to elected officials, Native American tribes, and other stakeholders as part of its review of the Trump administration's controversial rollback of national monuments, kickstarting a process that's widely expected to result in Biden's fulfilling his campaign promise to restore protected sites. So they are trying to roll that back and dismantle the proclamations that Trump put into effect. And, you know, the reason that these things were put into effect is it's this whole fossil fuel and, you know, mining and things like that Trump decided that is good for the country. And, you know, of course, we've seen that roll into other situations like in Texas in the last week. Of course, we just came out of our big freeze and lots of snow.
Yeah.
And they had that trouble in Texas. You know, the argument was that the, you know, the grid is failed. And I don't know why they have been screaming about the wind and solar power, because that was only like maybe 10% or less of the, you know, of the entire state. And,
well, they tried to deflect that because they don't want to take the blame themselves because they failed to spend the money to winter harden those assets. It's that simple. I mean,
other places have no problem. You know, I was seeing pictures of, you know, like Antarctica with wind turbines and stuff. So it's something that they really have not done a lot in. I've got a friend who has just moved to Austin recently from New Jersey in a construction, and he's putting in, had moved to a lot of solar energy projects. And, so there is some openness to that happening, but it kind of depends on the city you're in, you know, in Texas. Austin is pretty open to it, but, other cities are not, you know, Dallas and some other places. So anyway,
well, it's interesting that the places where in the United States where solar energy makes the most sense are the places where there's also the most amount of oil and gas underneath the underneath the surface, which really complicates this in some ways. Although I guess you should ask yourself, what would you rather have, a bunch of oil wells around your house or a solar panel on the top of your roof,
right?
You know, your call. But I think that's, I think that's going to change. I think, you know, what a lot of people don't realize is that there are very few, traditional oil wells producing enough to support their own operations without fracking. So, if it wasn't for fracking, which, you know, the last I heard from one of the responsible articles I had seen, you know, next to burning coal, fracking is the single most damaging thing we've ever done to the environment. So right. I just think the more that plays out, the more somebody's going to go, okay, we can either have this or we're going to have a solar panel on my roof. Which will we go? I don't think too many people are going to want to keep with fracking.
Yeah. Well, and I keep saying earthquakes in Oklahoma and that they've now proven, you know, are really a result of that. And
right.
Not to mention the terrors it does to drink, you know, fresh, clean drinking water.
Right.
So, I sure hope that changes as well. But, you know, it seems like nowadays, if it doesn't make sense, they want to do it. So.
You know, what's interesting is all of a sudden now that we don't have Donald Trump sucking all the air out of the news every day, we're starting to see things that have been not reported just because it's just so tempting to report evidently on his antics every day.
Right.
A study that was done recently on the quality of the worldwide freshwater fish population.
Right.
It was pretty shocking. Obviously, some countries don't have the resources we do to restock their lakes. You know, I would suggest that we're not doing it very well here. But some places they don't do it at all. And, you know, worldwide, they're saying that the freshwater fish population is down between 68 and 94%. And it's becoming a catastrophe of, you know, magnitude that these countries have never seen before. Yeah. That so many people rely on freshwater fish for their living, from their businesses to people use them for food, and it's becoming a massive problem. You're talking about, you know, a number of freshwater fish species that have been extinct in the last 4 years. So we're talking about some serious problems heading our way that no one seems to be addressing. I'm not sure anyone knows how. And the culprits are what you would think they were. It's overfishing, it's pollution, it's climate change. It's all of the things that we know to be dangerous to the environment. Well, in fact, what we are finding is, and they use this word in this article, these freshwater fish are sort of like a canary in the coal mine. They're isolated little lakes. They're a microclimate that suffers first from all of these things, overpopulation, population explosion, pollution, climate change. They get hurt worse than something big like the oceans do. And everyone seems to be focusing on the reefs, worldwide saltwater species that are starting to diminish. What no one had studied up until recently was the freshwater species that are being decimated worldwide. So some serious problems there that are going to deserve a lot of attention. And I'm not sure anyone's A, thought about, B, has any money to support, and who knows where that's going to go. Yeah.
Well, I guess talking about fish, let's move on from that topic. And I thought this was really interesting. Don brought it up, and we've only got about 10 minutes left here. So,
oh, wow.
I know it goes fast. But there was an article about the science of why bass are getting harder to catch, which I thought was pretty interesting, was what Don brought up. And so basically they've done a research. They've researched this, and it started in 2017, and apparently, you know, bass fishing was really primarily a southern thing. There were more bass in the south, so that's kind of where they started with this. And over time, catch rates began to decline, and they blamed the angler harvest. But even though they tried to do some protection, in that result did not change, and so they were. Another thing that started to evolve is the catch and release thing, you know, like where if you don't catch it, if you're in a bass tournament or whatever, and you don't catch one big enough, you'll toss it back. Well, turns out that in this 2017 study, this was at Mississippi State University, they were working in small unfished ponds and places like that to see whether the catch rates were any different. And then they'd stop fishing for about 2 months, and then when they started fishing again, the catch rates would shoot back up. So yeah. Basically what they're saying is that the bass learn, you know, as soon as, especially if they're caught and released, they learn that these lures and things are to or should be avoided. and yeah. and everything goes down. So it's kind of interesting to know that bass actually can learn something, and they will forget after a couple months apparently. But that's pretty interesting, I think, that these studies they're trying to get them more into bass populations in big lakes and trying to see what's happening in general. But you know, the big thing here is that catch and release may actually be tougher on the ability to catch a bigger one than you used to think. You know, you'd think, well, here, this one's small, I'm going to throw him back and let him get bigger.
You know, Rich, I'll bet that was a surprise to everybody, but someone who ties flies.
Right.
I think those folks, you know, that's kind of the zen of all this, isn't it? You know,
yep.
Trying to figure out a way to trick fish into biting what you're throwing out there. I think those folks probably are not surprised by that at all.
Well, we're down to 2 minutes. I did want
2 minutes.
Yeah, I know, it's going fast.
Gee.
I want to say that Lake Monroe is now at 538.6, and it is gone up from temperature of about 33 degrees last week, because you even sent me some pictures of the frozen lake. Now it's up to 37.6. So I think the frozen lake's going away real fast.
It's we're starting to see big patches of open water out here.
Yeah.
And you know, what was interesting is during the open water patches, there's a lot of geese and cranes went overhead. During the frozen part of the lake, even the eagles started going not along the shoreline, but back on the land looking for land creatures to eat,
right?
Because there was nothing on the shoreline to get.
Yep. Well, and with that, we're about done with our show. You know, it's kind of fun that we're getting through all this stuff. Finally, there's something to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. So
that means the spring's coming, and I'm excited about that. I think we're all pretty sick of winter after the last 2 weeks. But I'm glad to hear you've thawed out a little bit, and I have too. And we're looking at 60s pretty much this next week, 50s, and I'm excited about that too. So
I'm loving it.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we covered a lot of stuff, and hopefully I'll see Buddy Bill coming back next week. And but
thanks. Look forward to that.
Yep, thanks for being on the show, and we'll be back and see you guys all next week. So hang in there and enjoy this weather. Get out there and get some exercise.
See y'all next week.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Inside Outdoors comes to you from the beautiful rolling hills and green forests of southern Indiana. Thanks for listening. Inside Outdoors is brought to you each week on Saturday mornings at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. If you happen to miss the show, you can listen online at wfhb.org. Just go to the public affairs listing and you'll find a podcast of our show.